was a good ball played into Tony Morley. Oh, he missed it!
Hello, Aston Villa fans, and welcome to the Villa Forever podcast. I am your host, Chad Williams. Please subscribe and make sure to give this video the thumbs up. And on this week's interview episode, I'm joined by my special guest, Mark Regan. Also, his nickname is known as Rego. He is a commentator for Villa TV, and he was a former commentator on BBC WN. Over the years, Mark has been a brilliant voice for Aston Villa fans, and even some of the BBC WN's diehard listeners. It's always great to have voices like that for our football club. Pleased to have the show, Mark. How are you?
I'm all right, Chad. Thanks for having me on. It's nice to be here.
It's actually a pleasure. And to us, Mark, I've been listening to you for years.
Yeah, it's been a while. I think it's coming on for around about 30 years, one guys or another, one station or another. So, yeah, it's been a long time.
Well, especially for Aston Villa. Also, you've done other work over the years, but you covered Aston Villa mainly.
Yeah, I think first Villa games I did for a Birmingham audience would have been when I was at BRMB. And that would have been around about 2001, 2002, that sort of era. Mm-hmm. And then started properly with the BBC in 2003, I think it was. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, here we are, 2025, still going.
So, we'll get into the interview then. So, how did your career start in sports media? How did it all start?
Well, it was, it's kind of weird, really, because it was like a lot of people do at university. I did media and communication studies. It was at the place at Perry Bar. It's had loads of different names since then. It was the University of Central England when I went there. And anyway, part of the module there was work experience. And as a lot of people do with degrees, I went to BBC Hereford and Worcester. And there was a guy there who ran the sports department called Simon Hill, who now works in Australia. And that was my first real taste of working in radio in a sports kind of environment. And I liked it. I enjoyed it. I got a thrill out of it. And so that was kind of like what I wanted to do. And then my first real gig, the first job was over at Leicester, 1996, I think it was. And I'd been to university in Birmingham. Somebody I worked with, went to university with, worked at this radio station, Leicester Sound it was. It doesn't exist anymore, I don't think. And so I got a gig there. And that was in February, I think it was. And then it was just after Martin O'Neill had started at Leicester, and just all the good times had started at Leicester, because they went on to get promoted in the playoffs that year. Then the following year, they won the League Cup with Martin. Then it was into Europe. So I had a real slice of luck, if you like.
Well, 1996. I was actually born then, but it's going back 1996.
Thank you. I'm really that old. Yeah, so I had a massive slice of luck, really, because I was learning my trade, and also it was covering a successful, vibrant football club at the time. And it was great fun. It was great fun. I look back, because obviously Martin and my path crossed again when he came to Villa years down the line. So it was just fantastic learning experience, really.
And you had a very long career. From where you started, you covered a lot of other teams.
Yeah.
You covered actually Man United.
Yeah.
Liverpool, and is it Everton? Did you do any work for Everton?
Yeah, well, there was a radio station after Leicester Sound. I got a job up in Manchester for a radio station called Century, which was what they call a regional station. It wasn't like a city. It wasn't just Manchester. It was a regional, and it covered the whole of the Northwest. And they were big on football at the time. So they got the deal for Manchester United games. There was Man City, there was Everton, Liverpool, and then a whole host of other clubs like your Blackburns and your Tranmere's and all that kind of thing. They had 19 clubs in their area. So again, that was fantastic experience because, you know, you're flying all over Europe and some big games. Yeah. That was my first taste of Champions League football covering Manchester United.
Ferguson?
Say again?
Sir Alex Ferguson, did you do it during his time?
Yeah. It was the year after they won the treble. So I think they won that in 99. And then I started in 2000. So, it was a successful time for them. They're still winning league titles and all that malarkey, but they didn't win the Champions League when I was covering them. I think they got knocked out by Real Madrid, which was, again, a game that sticks out in my memory because it was a quarter-final Champions League, Old Trafford, Real Madrid. So it was a big game.
Oh, well.
It was fantastic. The other game that sticks out is Liverpool-Barcelona, Anfield. I think it was the semi-final. Oh, well. I'm pretty sure it was called the UEFA Cup then. Obviously, it's the Europa League now. But that was a great night. Gary McAllister scored the only goal of the game, penalty. But I always remember the atmosphere was absolutely fantastic that night. So, certain things sort of stick in your mind over the years, and that's one.
You've experienced some different cultures and different football cultures, but like traveling also around Europe.
Yeah.
It must have been a great experience.
It was and still is. I mean, I don't know about you, Chad, but I never really thought I'd see Villa in the Champions League. But obviously they got there and I got to cover them and travel with Villa, which is
incredible.
It really was. When things like that happen to you in your career, you know, you try and make the most of them. You try to remember them, try to be appreciative of them. And also, obviously, you try and do a good job anyway. But they are standout moments, no two ways about it. And then, you know, you do get a special feeling about those kind of games.
And I do like your passion and enthusiasm as well.
Yeah, that's one thing that was kind of instilled in me from when I started to do it, really. And because my background was commercial radio before I went to the BBC, and they had a different approach to BBC sort of local radio commentary. I don't know whether you remember a guy, he works for Match of the Day now, Jonathan Pearce. He used to run Capital Radio down in London. And there was, you know, did some bits and bobs of freelance and whatever. And obviously Tom Ross, who I worked with at BRNB, was part of the Capital Radio group. And I did a couple of years with Tom at BRNB. And that was all about the passion. And that's because, obviously, as you know, when you're a fan, if a goal goes in, it's a deeply... passionate moment, you know. It's
good doing a job that you enjoy, that you love.
Yeah, you've got to throw yourself into it, you know, because as I say, if you are commentating, your audience is obviously interested because they're listening and they want to share that experience. So you've got to give it something, some sort of feeling, if you like, that to convey how exciting or dramatic or disappointing or frustrating sometimes a game of football can be.
In the BRNB days, there were some good times on BRNB, because I remember, was it the goal zone, was it?
That was, I think that came afterwards.
I remember Tom Ross, he did it for many years.
Yeah, Tom Ross was there. Ian Danter, who now works on Talk Sport, was there. And myself. Prior to me, Jim Proudfoot, who now does a lot of TV games, was there as well. So, yeah, he had a very rich history. And, of course, going back even further, Tony Butler was a long time ago on BRNB, and I worked with him at WM.
Did you work with Jack Woodward?
Yeah, Jack Woodward. I think he was before me at BRNB. Yeah, he was there as well. So there's been quite a lot of people that have worked with Tom at BRNB, yeah.
Jack. We've got a lot of history. Because I used to be a service user. at Acorns Children's Hospice.
Oh, yeah.
And when the players used to do regular visits.
Mm.
And then the drug ward used to get to be singing there. There's a good memory there.
Yeah, yeah. I remember I covered the game in Moscow under Martin O'Neill, which obviously became quite a famous game. And Jack did some singing on the plane on the way back. All the players there. So, yeah, yeah. He used to do singing quite a lot, Jack.
I think he's still done it. He actually has got a good voice.
Yeah. Fair play to him. I haven't.
Does he? And always at the presentations. Is he looking at the presenting as well?
Yeah, yeah. I think he still does.
Yep. And also, so what was it like during your time working for BRNB?
It was great. It was good fun. I still see Tom because he comes to the games. So, it was good. I learned a lot off him, and he was good for me. No two ways about that, because I got 2 years great experience at BRNB, and that stood me in good stead before I moved over to the BBC. But it was good old times, because commercial radio is a different animal to BBC in that it's a lot more. Obviously, you need audience figures in commercial radio because then they sell the adverts to that. So it's important to get an audience is a very, very important thing. Whereas the BBC know that it's paid for by the license fee, so there's a little bit less pressure, if you like. But it was good fun working at BRNB.
The BRNB now, it's called Free Radio now.
Yeah, there's over the years, it's commercial radio has changed a lot. I mean, a lot of radio stations these days, number one, don't exist. And number two, even if they do, don't touch football anymore in the commercial sector. I mean, there was Radio City in Liverpool. They were a huge sports station. Mm-hmm. Don't do it anymore. Metro Radio in Newcastle, don't do it anymore. Capital in London, don't do sport anymore. So it's all changed over the years.
Did WM, were they still going? Did we go BRNB? Or was BRNB, was that used to be the football instead?
No, the WM did the football.
Okay.
BRNB did football as well. Yeah, they both did it. I think there was, going back, I'm trying to remember now, there used to be like exclusive rights sometimes. So BRNB would have exclusive rights. So BBC WM would be covering other games that they had the rights to. But over the years it changed and everybody got the rights to everything. So yeah, I think they both did. Because Tim Beach was my predecessor at BBC WM. They've got a long history of covering sport on WM.
Well, isn't the way that you got competition a bit like with...
Yeah.
The way you got BBC and ITV, it's a little bit like that, probably.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was, yeah. And to be fair, it makes you better if there's a bit of competition, because it just makes you keeps you on your toes sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. So why did you want to work in sports media, journalism and broadcasting?
As I say, when I was at university, I hadn't got a clue what I wanted to do, to be honest. And it just kind of happened to me in a way. And I thought, well, I like this, and going again, showing my age, was everything used to happen on tape way back when. So you had razor blades and this, that and the other. And I enjoyed the hands-on chopping up bits of tape to make packages or interviews or whatever. These days, everything's digital, so you don't get your hands dirty, so to speak. But and I just kind of liked it. And obviously, the more you get into it, it's a job that is very varied, shall we say. No 2 weeks are the same, which is great, because I think I've got the kind of personality of being a 9-5 office kind of job. I get bored. So that variety keeps you going, if you like. I mean, if you do anything for as long as I have, then there are good days and bad days, etc. But it's generally speaking, the variety keeps you going. And also,
it's a big industry, sports media.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, these days with the world of online and you have podcasts like yourself, it's become even more varied than it ever used to be. When I started, it was like if you wanted to know how a game of football was going on, you'd have to listen to the radio, etc. Sure. These days, you know, club media, like I work for Villa now, have their own outlets as well as Twitter, Facebook, etc., and everything online in between. So there's loads of different sources these days for media output.
Do you think that these days is more accessible?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. I mean, everybody can access it anytime. So it's a changing world. It always has been, I suppose. I'm glad I'm not 20 something starting out now, because I don't know where I'd go. Yeah. To be honest with you, because like I said earlier, a lot of the radio stations that used to do sport don't do it anymore. So it's tough to get into.
So we're going to talk about your time at BBC WM. So how would you describe your time at BBC WM? What was your experience like working there?
It was great. We had all sorts of everything, because the one thing that the BBC did was cover different sports, so that you got a chance to have a go at Speedway and stuff like that. They were obviously very big on cricket as well. And it was really good. And also there was some sort of one-off experiences, if you like, and particularly in 2006, where I was working with Tony Butler, and we got to go over to Germany. It was the World Cup in Germany. We went over there and hosted loads of phone-ins from various places around the country. And that was a phenomenal experience. It was just incredible, really, to look back on. And like I said earlier, when things like that happen, you appreciate them. Not only because I was working with a bona fide radio legend in Tony Butler, who was fantastic to work with. And then just got to go around Germany, and it was boiling hot.
It's a unique idea. It's something different to experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something I've not done since, that I didn't do before. So it was fantastic. It really was. So you got things like that to do when I was at the BBC. So it was good fun.
I mean, you made a lot of memories. You made a lot of friends over the years.
Yeah. Well, you do. Like I say, if you do anything for any length of time, your face gets around and people sort of recognise you, remember you and whatever. But, it was good fun. And obviously, I spent a lot of time with Franksy as well, who's also left WM these days. But
he did it before, does he? Did.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, well, Franksy did it for years. He was there before I started. So he did it for a good old while, as well as his drive time show. He did the sport and the phone in as well. So, yeah, it was just brilliant fun. You know, like I said earlier, you get good days and bad days, and there are tough times, but you know, you keep going, you get through those, and you enjoy it. And it was great fun. And at the end of the day, Chad, you know, there are worse ways to earn a living than watching a game of football. So it's, you know... You always appreciate it, and I think that goes from nearly everybody that I've met in the industry. That everybody enjoys it and is passionate about it and wants it to be good. You know, whatever the end result is, everybody starts off from that premise: is they want to do it and they enjoy it.
And that's why I enjoy doing my podcast.
Yeah,
I'm meeting like new people. It gives me a purpose. Well, it keeps me motivated.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's good, and when it comes off, and it's a good, you know, it's a nice feeling, and like any job, like you do one podcast and it might be great, and you want to make the next one even better, sort of thing. So it's the same, you know, when you do a commentary game, sometimes you have bad games, you know, that's just the way it is.
Of course.
And it's horrible feeling, because you know yourself when you've had a good game or a bad game, and the feeling when you. Not quite been as good as you'd wanted to be.
Well, it is. I think it's easier to talk about a game when like, you're winning, because when you lose it,
it's
a bit like people that, you know, like do these articles.
Yeah.
It's always easy to talk about the good moments and the bad moments.
Mm. Yeah, it's always more enjoyable to cover a team that's winning games of football than not. No two ways about it. I mean, obviously, Villa have had some tough times over the years.
Oh, they have, yeah.
And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I didn't think that Villa would be in the Champions League because there were some really bad times. You know, I saw them get stuffed up at Wigan.
Do you think about the Championship days?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it is amazing how far Villa have come since those days that were not that long ago.
It's remarkable, really.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And I think that generally speaking, the fans that I meet and talk to are more appreciative of the good times now because they were there. You know, when half of Villa Park was closed down under the Dr. Tony Sharp sort of era for the home games, they didn't have the whole ground open. So it was, there were some tough times. And sometimes, you know, if you cover a side and they're not doing very well, turn up, get beat, go home, turn up, get beat, go home. It is, it's hard work because, like I said earlier, you've got to convey a certain set of emotions. And if the audience, i.e. Villa fans, are angry, frustrated, then you have to convey that in the commentary sometimes.
Well, as an Aston Villa fan, I sort of know how it feels to be like rock bottom. And so for the Championship, obviously the Champions League. So during my time being a Villa fan, I'll see a lot of ups and downs. I mean, I'm supporting Villa. But I don't seem to get older since the Martin O'Neill era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And since then, I'll see a lot of different times.
Yeah. Well, the O'Neill era was quite successful, I thought. It was three top six finishes, wasn't it? There was a cup final, cup semi-finals and all that malarkey. And then, unfortunately, as you know, it went sour. And from that moment, it took Villa a long time to sort of recover from that, really, including the various changes of ownership. So, it was that was a little taster, as it turns out, of what was to come.
The Royals always give credit to Dean Smith, I do as well.
Yeah. Well, Dean, I dealt with Dean when he was at Walsall, he was always fantastic to deal with. And I was really, really pleased when he got the job at Villa because I knew that he was a Villa boy. And obviously his dad worked at the club as well. So, and for him to come in at a fairly turbulent time, settle everything down, and went on that fantastic run of wins into the playoffs.
And was it like 10 games or something?
I want to say 13. I might be wrong. I might be
13,
wrong.
13, might be more increase with that, yeah.
And I think they were in 13th place as well. They were 13th at the table, and he got them up.
Yeah.
And he kept them up and also got to a cup final in the first season as well. So, you know, he did a fantastic job for Aston Villa Football Club. And I know he's over in the States at the moment, but as and when he returns to Villa as maybe a visiting manager or whatever, or whatever, guys, he'd always get a fantastic welcome. Because
Dean Smith, he did what he could. Didn't you know Emery then? He took us to the next level then.
Yeah. I mean, if we'd have been doing this podcast sort of 5 years ago, I don't think either of us would have predicted what happens under Unai Emery. Really, I mean, it's gone just above and beyond expectation, you know. And like I said, to be going all over Europe watching Villa in the Champions League, and by the way, competing in the Champions League as well. I mean, I'll never forget that night at home, even though they got knocked out of the Paris Saint-Germain game. It was fantastic. You know, the atmosphere was brilliant. I thought for 20 minutes they had arguably the best team in the world on the rack. And I thought Villa were going to knock them out at one stage.
Yeah.
But it was, and also the night when Bayern Munich, you know, came to town, that was a fantastic night. So,
I was there because I didn't know it was meant to be. The same scoreline as it was in 82.
Yeah. Well, the fact that that was the first Champions League game, I know the competition had a different name since at Villa Park, it had to be Bayern Munich, you know, so there was a script written, if you like. And obviously, with Duran's goal, it was fantastic. Another great atmosphere, by the way.
Since being in Europe, as a fan, I made some great memories. Because I was there at a few of the Champions League games last season.
Mm.
And the atmosphere, it gave me the goosebumps, especially.
Yeah.
PSG game as well.
Yeah. I've always thought the Villa under the lights midweek was always got something special about it anyway. But for those nights, the atmosphere, the Champions League, you know, the anthem ringing out around Villa Park was spine tingling. And the games, by and large, were really good. But like I said, the two that stick out for me are the Bayern Munich game and the Paris Saint-Germain game. Even though the PSG game ended in obviously disappointment because they were knocked out, but it was a game that will be talked about for a very, very long time.
Well, PSG, when I went out that stadium at Villa Park, all fans would come out proud. They were all proud.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I say, I mean, PSG obviously went on to win the competition anyway and are widely regarded as one of the best teams in the world, if not the best team in the world. For 20-odd minutes in that second half, they couldn't live with Aston Villa. You know, and I really thought once Contra got the goal, I thought Villa were going to go on and at least force it into extra time sort of thing. But it was brilliant. The stadium was shaking. I can still remember it now. And it was a fantastic moment to be there.
You remember when Ezri Konsa scored that goal?
Yeah.
Everyone in the stadium was thinking, oh, the comeback's on.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Because obviously they took a 2-0 lead, didn't they, on the night? Yeah. And it looked very bleak. But then the comeback happened. And it was brilliant. It was just fantastic. Really, really good to see. But like I say, it ended in disappointment in that they were knocked out. But they still got to the quarterfinals of the Champions League and were not the eventual winners. So.
And also, I actually missed the Champions League. Maybe next season.
You never know. You never know. I mean, the Europa League.
You win the Europa League, yeah, you get it in that way.
That's right. Yeah. That's it, yeah. I mean, obviously, it starts this month, the Europa League, so that's going to be another exciting campaign. And
yeah, I'm going to a few of the games. I'm going to go to a few of them.
Yeah, good. And I think it will be, I mean, it might not be the Champions League, okay, but it is, like you say, it's a chance to get back into the Champions League, so... I think it's going to be an exciting campaign. And I know some of the Villa fans have already booked their hotels and their flights, etc. And they'll have a great time.
Oh, yeah. Going back to what you're talking about, BBC WMA. You've been covering Aston Villa, was it since the David O'Leary time, was it?
Yeah, he was more or less the first Villa manager that I started when I was at WM that I dealt with, yeah. So... There was, he was the first one, yeah.
Yeah. That's good, then we sort of struggled then. Over the years, then we got a bit better after that, I think. But, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's all lost in the midst of time now. Didn't it? But I can't remember the O'Leary era as being anything significant really
happening. With Pablo Angel.
You've got me there, Chad. I can't remember. The only thing I can remember from the David O'Leary era, was Lee Bowyer and Kieran Dyer fighting Newcastle.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Was that when you moments and commentator?
Yeah, yeah.
It was a big scrap.
Because, well, I think they'd already had a guy sent off Newcastle. I think they finished the game with about 9 men or something like that. Maybe even 8. But yeah, it was bizarre. I was up there with Frank C. And Villa had more or less won the game anyway. And then obviously this fight breaks out because it was quite close to where the commentary position was. And again, just you never know what you're going to get at a game of football. And it's like one of those moments you know you remember for a long, long time. And I remember Graham Souness, who was the Newcastle manager at the time, made both the players, Lee Bowyer and Kieran Dyke, come out and do the press afterwards. So it was an eventful day.
Because I remember, because Gareth Barry was playing then.
Yeah, yeah. I think he was the one that broke them up. I think.
That's it, he did.
I'd have to look at YouTube again, but yeah.
But don't believe me, I don't think they were not the best times, I don't think.
Yeah, like I say, I mean, the worst... Several Villa managers, I think, that had the job at difficult times. I mean, Doug Ellis was still the owner, stroke chief executive at the time of David O'Leary. And then there are other managers later down the line, I think Paul Lambert and Alex McLeish, that were given jobs that I know it's difficult to describe, really, because obviously Randy Lerner had decided that he effectively, you know, wanted to pull up the financial drawbridge, if you like. So Villa were never going to be competing at the top end. This is post O'Neill, wasn't it? So I think those managers, their brief was trying to sort of keep us in the Premier League and not much else really, unfortunately. But obviously,
they can only take us so far.
Yeah, so I mean, fans' expectations were more than that. You know, Villa fans wanted to be up towards the top of the table. They wanted to be.
Was it Steven Gerrard? But that was difficult times.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I think that Alex McLeish and Paul Lambert, by and large, did a good job for Aston Villa because, by and large, they did keep them in the Premier League.
Yeah.
You know? So it's, but they weren't glamorous times. They weren't good times for the football club. But obviously, as we've already spoken about, there have been some pretty bad times as well.
The thing is, over the years, during your covering Aston Villa, just had some different managers come and go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's football, isn't it? I mean, what's the average life expectancy of a manager these days? About 18 months or something like that. So, yeah, they don't tend to stay in the jobs very long for one reason or another, unless there's massive success. But, yeah, I'd have to sit down and work out how many Villa managers I've had over the years.
Well, Jim and Steve Bruce. The cabbage.
Well, I wasn't there at that game because I booked a holiday or whatever it was. Was it Preston that game?
Yeah, does it, yeah.
And so I'd missed that. I missed that game. But I do remember the build-up to it. Unfortunately for Steve, it didn't work for him at Villa. And again, that was one of those managers. I got a lot of time for Steve. He was brilliant to deal with.
Yeah.
But he had a tough job because there wasn't a lot of money around at the time. And like I said, you know, the expectations were, let's get back into the Premier League and let's start competing. But it was some tough old times. And it just didn't work for Steve.
Well, in the season, when we lost in the playoff final, it's Fulham, when it won them. But the thing is, if it not season, it wasn't meant to be, then also the year after we did it.
Yeah. That was a massive moment in the club's recent history, that, because obviously they lost the playoff final, but then it was in between the change of the ownership, wasn't it? And there were some tax problems and this and that and the other.
With Evans and Nassif Sawiris, that's it.
Yeah. So it was, had they have won that playoff, the first one, I'm not so sure we'd be here today. You know, it sounds a weird thing to say.
I do think things happen for a reason, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, obviously, everybody was gutted. And then, but then, out of bad times come good times, because then the change of the ownership happened. And then Villa, you know, started to make the strides that they're still making today. So, yeah, sometimes you've got to go backwards to go forwards, as they say. But that was a moment at the time, nobody realised it. That actually was probably quite a pivotal moment.
I'll tell you what, another turning point as well was at West Bromwich Albion playoff semi final.
Mm-hmm.
The one game at the Hawthorns, where an aggregate, and I scored. He went to penalties.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It could be very different then.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But that's football, isn't it? You know, it's these moments can decide not only careers, but the future of football clubs, etc., especially in the playoff situation in the Championship, because, you know, that's a season's work. And obviously the difference between getting promoted and not getting promoted financially is absolutely massive. Yes. And they can come down to little moments here or there. But yeah, that was another big moment.
I was going to say, what was it like working alongside Gary Thompson during your commentator work on BBCWM?
Tomo, well, we had some fantastic times. I mean, Tomo, I still see Gary now at the games. He was great to work with, really, really. Because it's really, if you've got like a commentator pundit that are week in, week out working together, the one thing that's really important is you've got to get on with one another. You know, you can't be falling out with one another and having rows and this, that and the other. But Tom and me, we kind of just hit it off, really. A lot of banter flying around. And we enjoyed each other's company. So, and that came over, I think. If you listen to the games, I think you can always tell if two people are getting on.
One of the nicest people that you can ever meet.
Yeah, he's a solid, down-to-earth kind of guy. And I enjoyed working with him. I really did. I would still get occasionally a chance to work with him because he does do occasional bits for the TV. But he's primarily on BBC WM still. So, but no, I really enjoyed working with Gary. And it was kind of like the cusp, if you like, We had some bad times, i.e. the football wasn't pleasant, and then we had some good times as well. So it was a good crack. It was a good crack with Gary.
And Gary Thompson, being an ex-player, on the commentary, he could give you a good insight.
Yeah.
Because he's sort of been there and done it as sort of like a player.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good pundit does that. They can see things that people like me can't, because they have, like you say, crossed the white line. Mm-hmm. And they can pick out and they can explain. I can maybe say what's happening, and then Gary would say why it's happened, because of this, because of that, da-da-da-da-da. And that's, you know, that's what a good pundit does. They can just put some meat on the bones, if you like.
It's all like, and, you know, and it adds humour as well.
Yeah. Well, that's important. You have to have, they call it light and shade. You have to have that. Because if you're talking for an hour and a half and it's all on a level, it's going to get boring. So you have to have analysis, a little bit of banter, information. It has to keep going all the time.
And was it the Brighton guy, the last guy that you and Gary Thompson did together?
That's right, yeah. November 2020 it was, yeah. Because that was just, I want to say, it was COVID. I think it was the empty stadium era. Because one of the other games that sticks out was 4th of October 20. One of my last games for WM was when they beat Liverpool 7-2, which was remarkable game, remarkable scoreline, but it was in front of an empty stadium, unfortunately.
And Gary Thompson is always known for wearing his cap as well.
Keeps his head warm.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, it's nice that, but it's nice at both of you. You sort of bounced off each other really well. You have a good relationship.
Yeah, well, like I say, that's because we got on away from the microphone. And I always think you can tell if a regular commentary team are getting on, then it'll just have a sort of a natural flow about it, if you like. And yeah, it worked well with Gary, no doubt about it.
I was going to ask you, like, as a commentator, do you have to practice a lot of different names? How do you feel about pronouncing names and stuff?
Well, these days, it's a little bit easier than it ever used to be because of the wonderful thing called the internet. You know, you can get, you can find out how to pronounce, especially some like European names, can be a bit tricky because I don't speak any foreign languages. But some of the names can be a bit of a problem. But, and even then, if you get a name with a lot of syllables in and you have to talk quickly because maybe something exciting's happened, you can still get tripped up by them, you know. But it's just, like I said earlier, you can only do your best and you do all your preparation, this, that and the other, and you want it to go well.
Do you get a team sheet?
Normally you get them. I mean, the teams are announced a little bit earlier these days and you get the team sheet come through normally about an hour before kickoff. So you do have a little bit of time to make a few notes and simplify how a name is spelt as against how it's pronounced. But these days, a lot of it is... See, the thing is, for me, I've never really been a stats-based commentator.
Some
people might say, oh, well, that's because I'm lazy. And then, fair enough, they might be right. But these days, if anybody wants to find out how many times a player has played for his country or scored with his left foot or whatever, you can find that out. You don't need the commentator of the game to tell you that. What you do need the commentator of the game to tell you about is the game, because you're not there. Yeah. So I've always tried to keep it about the game rather than stats. I'm not saying I don't have any. Yeah. I just don't have as many as
You don't really need loads of stats, I don't think. As long as you're sort of prepared.
Yeah, I mean, there are always going to be things that crop up, like when Ollie Watkins scored the goal that made him the top Premier League scorer for Aston Villa. So there's things like that that are always going to be going on, or if somebody's going to make 500 appearances for the club, you know, it's worth acknowledging, it's that level of preparation, if you like. But above and beyond that, I wouldn't go into forensic depth like a lot of other people do. And fair play, everybody's got their own way of doing it.
Yeah. So what was your favourite moment covering Aston Villa and WM?
Well, I was thinking about this, and it's really tough. any one single moment. Obviously, when they got promoted at Wembley, that was a big moment. Various other games stick out. The 6-4 against Blackburn that got them down to Wembley. I think that was Martin.
That was a
good night. And obviously, you know, recently, when they got the Champions League campaign, got to go over to Switzerland for Bern for the first one against Young Boys. Bern was a lovely place.
The atmosphere was amazing.
Yeah. And just to sort of be there at that moment, and it was a little bit, it was a lot bittersweet, really, because the news came through that Gary Shaw had passed away. I think it was the day before the actual game, and his face was on the scoreboard on the far side. So it was one of those moments, you know. It was great that they were back, but obviously it was tinged with a lot of sadness because I knew Gary. I'd seen him a couple of weeks before he passed over at Leicester.
So I can't believe that he's gone still.
Yeah, and so sad. But like I said, at the time when you sat there in the chair. And you're live, you have to deal with that unpleasantness, also the fact that, you know, this is also big news. Villa are back in the Champions League, and of course they went on to win the game as well. So it's all kinds of everything sometimes, football, and getting the balance right can be tricky. When it works, it works, and when it doesn't,
did you commentate the playoff final?
Yes.
In 2019?
Say again?
In 2019?
Yeah. I did the both. I did the Derby one and the Fulham one. Yeah. Again, exciting times. Well, any visit to Wembley is an exciting time, really.
Well, I was there, I really annoyed, because actually, in my lifetime as a fan, it's the first time we really won something. And I remember when the final whistle blew, for the players and fans, it was a massive relief.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I mean, it's, again, sometimes moments happen that you have to, I say you go with. Sometimes the game and the moment can take you with it, you know, a little bit like the PSG game in many ways.
Yeah.
And when big moments like that happen, like the promotion or, you know, if Villa were to go and win an FA Cup, the moment that the cup gets lifted or whatever, they're really fantastic moments. And sometimes the best thing you can do is just try and hold on to them as best you can.
Yeah. But as fans, you need to hold on to the memories. It's important.
Yeah.
The memories is what you want in football.
Yeah. Good ones.
You remember, I remember the final whistle singing Sweet Caroline.
Yeah.
The fans. It's really emotional.
And again, you know, there's been some great games. I think Villa's recent record at the Emirates Stadium, for instance, is not a bad one.
Only Watkins, season where we got Champions League football, and Eli Emery did it in his own team's backyard.
Yeah. And there was a week at Villa Park, I'm sure you remember it, there was two home games. Arsenal and Man City.
Arsenal, that's it. Yeah, that's the one.
Won them both 1-0, I think. I think it was December time. Yeah. What a week that was. You know, that was an incredible week.
It was one of the best weeks of my life, that was it.
I bet.
So also, how did you get the job for being a commentator on Villa TV? How did it happen?
Well, I'd taken voluntary redundancy from the BBC in November 2020. And so I'd kind of in my own mind thought that was it, I was done, sort of thing. But Villa sort of approached me and said, would I be interested in doing some games? I said yes, because why wouldn't you? And it sort of just grew from there, really. And now it's just for me as a 60-year-old guy, it's nice. It's fantastic, really, because I still get to do the thing I love doing, i.e. commentating. I get the rest of the week to myself. And it's obviously a really good time to be covering Aston Villa over the last 3-4 years. You know, so again, I talked about luck earlier. You need a bit of luck sometimes in life.
Yeah.
Bit of timing, right place,
right
time.
The thing is, you've worked your way up, really.
Well, I don't know about that. I think that one thing I've kept going is the bottom line. I've kept going. And hopefully, you know, along the way, there's been some good times. You know, people have enjoyed listening to me, so that's nice. You know, listen, in the modern world, because of Twitter and et cetera, you get criticized from time to time, which is unfortunately par for the course. But across the years, if you like, I'm just delighted that I can sort of, now that I am getting on a little bit, look back and pick out memories and people across the years and the decades that, yeah, that was pretty good. That was pretty good.
Is it like that people remember you? I think your voice is iconic on the radio.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice of you. But it's nice when people do, you know, because that's, okay, you're not doing it for any kind of fame or fortune. It's not not the best paid job in the world, but it's not the worst paid job in the world. I'm not moaning about it. But if people do remember you or appreciate you, then that's really nice. Just like any walk of life, I suppose. You know, everybody likes to hear nice things. But again, you just go into every game wanting it to be good. Sometimes it isn't.
You've had some iconic commentary moments over the years. So we'll talk to you about the Alan Hutton goal.
The Hutton goal, yeah.
Against Birmingham City in 2018. So can you talk me through the commentary? What was going through your mind?
Well, again, because it's a derby, there is an immediate sort of context to Aston Villa taking on Birmingham City because of the rivalry. So, and the game... I think it was 3-2 to Villa at the time.
Blues took the lead.
Blues took the lead, yeah. It was a corner, I think. So it wasn't done and dusted, you know, 3-2. Blues were still, they're still in it. And like everybody, and I think including Alan himself, when he picked the ball up 10 yards inside his own half, nobody thought he's going to run 50 yards and put it in the back of the net. And he was kind of like, if I can judge, I was behind him. He was running diagonally away from me towards the Holt end. And so he was, like I say, he's running, and it just felt like he was in a straight line running towards the Holt end. And I thought either somebody would foul him or he'd pass it off or whatever. But then, of course, he just kept going and he kept going and he kept going. It was a little bit like Forrest Gump, I suppose.
The whole stadium was shot.
Yeah.
No one can believe it.
And then, obviously, he puts the ball in the back of the net and the whole place went crazy. But he'd done something similar at Hull earlier in the season. He'd made a good run because, obviously, the Scottish Cafu nickname came about for him. So, so he slotted it in and off he went in the celebrations. And I think it'll be a goal that he's remembered for a very, very long time. You know,
just Alan Hutton, he was really popular in the fans. He was a real crowd pleaser, I thought.
He always
going at his all.
And that's all fans really want, isn't it? They want to see, however much ability you have or have not, if you give your everything for the football club, then fans will 9 times out of 10 love you for it. And Alan
forget they got, and also, you did excellent commentary as well for that goal.
Yeah, it's becoming, because that was the halfway to Moseley moment. So it's again, I don't know where that came from. I don't know. Tomo was laughing at me. He sat beside me, giggling his head off at the time. So, we mentioned it 2 or 3 times. That sometimes these little moments happen, you know, like from Kieran Dyer and Lee Bowyer fighting to Alan Hutton scoring that goal. To last minute winners, last minute losers, etc. And you've just
got to. You see a lot of local derbies.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was there when Jack Grealish got punched as well at St Andrews. Okay. But there's been a lot of Blues Villa games that really have not been entertaining at all. I think some of them, particularly the early kickoff ones, I think there was one game that kicked off at 11:30 in the morning.
Really, it was really early, yeah. I think something like that, yeah.
Never really got going. So, maybe sometimes they just don't live up to the hype. I don't know. But that one did.
It'll be interesting to see, actually, if we play Birmingham City But next season,
it could happen. It could happen.
You know, do you miss the derbies?
Yes and no. I mean, I like the big games, like any fan would do. I think, you know, commentators get up for big games just as much as players and fans do. But at the same time, there was a tinge of some nastiness about Blues Villa.
It's a shame that they'll be able to spoil it for the people.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily like that so much. I prefer it when it's a good game, you know, Villa beating Blues 4-2 and everybody...
No trouble.
And no trouble. So there's goals and there's something to talk about, if you like. But, yeah, I don't necessarily... I've never been at a game, touch wood, where it's been very, very, very unpleasant. I don't think I'd want to be, really. I may be a little bit lucky about that. But, yeah, I prefer to look back over footballing moments.
Well, it is. I think there's banter, but they're just taking it too far.
Yeah, yeah, it can happen. And it does happen sometimes, particularly with big rivalries, you know, Leeds United, Manchester United, etc.
Celtic Rangers.
Yeah, it can go a bit too far sometimes. But like I said, as a commentator, you try not to get involved with that. I don't think, like I say, I've ever seen anything too unpleasant on a game of football or at a football stadium.
So I'm going to ask you, Mark, what is the best advice you can give a football commentator?
You mean a young...
You're starting off here.
Get as much experience as you can. Like I said earlier, these days there's not so many radio stations that do it as when I started out doing it, so it's harder. But then there are other people that may stream games, and I'm, you know, thinking if you end up going, if you want to go to a non-league game, maybe commentate for them. Hospital radio is still going. It's just about getting out there and getting some experience, really.
Yeah.
And making mistakes, you know, I still make mistakes today.
I think you should learn from your mistakes.
That's exactly it. And you get experience, and you listen to other commentators, and like I say, you learn from your mistakes, and you'll get better and better and better. But it all comes with experience, and that's the one thing that is priceless, really. The more experience you can get.
Do you look up to anybody?
I don't look up to anybody. I don't want that to sound arrogant. There are people that I admire, normally of days gone by. And Peter Jones is, because way back when, Radio 2 used to do football commentary.
Yes.
And a guy called Peter Jones was their main commentator. There was a guy called Ian Robertson. I think he was the rugby commentator who commentated when the drop goal went over against Australia. I thought he was a very, very good commentator. And you know, you get your Barry Davises, your John Motsons. David Coleman was a good commentator. So
Martin Tyler.
Martin Tyler, yeah. The same thing again, he started off in local radio, a lot of them did. Guy Mowbray, I remember him working up in Newcastle way back when. Steve Wilson, he was at Capital Radio. Darren Fletcher was over at Trent Radio. He does the TNT games now.
You got Clive Tilsley?
I don't think I've met Clive, to be fair. But yeah, he was another, I think he was at Radio City, I think, Clive Tilsley, way back when. So I might be wrong with that. I might have got him wrong. I think he was at Trent as well. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, they've all come through the ranks, and I've stayed where I am.
Well, Mark, I'm going towards the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you two more questions before we finish.
Okay.
So do you think us new signings will help the squad?
Well, I think they will, because Unai Emery, like any football manager, needs options, and the more options, the better. I think it's going to be... an interesting month for Aston Villa coming up, because the Europa League campaign gets off and underway. They've got some new faces to bed into the squad. Because and the team.
Is it Bologna?
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, they played it for the last year. Yeah. So I think it's going to be interesting how they use the new faces and also what effect that has on the shape of the side and who plays where, etc. I mean, obviously, you and I, Emery, will have a plan in mind of how he wants to utilise his squad. But like I said earlier, it's about options, really. And obviously, you're going to come into the really big... I know we're only three games into the season, but from sort of November, December onwards, it gets busy. So the games will come thick and fast.
We're looking for like creativity, I think. Liz, what we need is, I think we need some new ideas.
Well, it's three games into a 38-game season in the Premier League, and like I say, they haven't started Europa League yet. And in any season, you're going to have a good spell, a dodgy spell. Maybe Villa's dodgy spell has just happened at the start. You know, I wouldn't get too upset about the way things are, and no more than I would get carried away if they'd won all three games. You know, 0-0 against Newcastle, tight game. The Brentford game, not a lot of chances in that one.
We haven't scored the goal yet, have we?
No, but like I say, it's three games. You know, so like if they'd won all three games 3-0, I wouldn't be getting too carried away, because you know football can give you a slap in the face at any time. But there's plenty of time for things to get made better, improve, etc.
I don't think we should panic yet.
No, I don't. Well, I hope nobody is. You know, the last few seasons should mean that the football club is fairly strong and settled and able to ride through a disappointing result here or there without it going into crisis mode. So it's just, I would say, one step at a time. I think the next two games are tough games, Everton and Sunderland. But let's see where Villa are, sort of turn of the year time.
Well, I think maybe not a tactical tweak. So might be needed. They might maybe do something different.
But what I would say is that Villa at the moment have one of the best managers in the world, arguably. And he will know what's required far more than anybody like me, for instance, would. So, you know, it's kind of like a little bit of trust, if you like. The manager needs to be given time and space to do his job. I think he's earned that with what he's done at Aston Villa so far. So you could look at three games in isolation at any time of the season and pick out something that's right or wrong, I would say let's just it's just well, three games. Trust the process. So you cracked up a bit there, Jeb.
We got to trust the process.
Yeah. And like I say, if Villa end up winning the Europa League and this season and they're in the Champions League next season, nobody's going to be talking about Brentford away on the second game of the season. So it's a long old season and we're only just starting.
That's interesting. The other way, Emery, he's the best manager we have in years. And I think he will turn it around.
I think you're right. I think you're right. You know, I just can't see. Like we mentioned earlier, if you compare where Villa are now to where they were, even sort of 4 or 5 years ago, it's night and day. And you go back even further to when they were in the Championship, it's an even bigger difference. So, you know, it's three games in amongst all of that.
Yeah, some fans, they get all sort of silly on social media and stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's social media for you, unfortunately. That's always going to happen.
Not getting sucked and all that, but no,
I've never really been one for trying to get the manager sacked or calling for them to get sacked. Even I used to get criticised because when Steve Bruce was the manager, I was giving him an easy ride or whatever. And that's part of the course. Okay, fine. But you can't. Nobody is successful in football doing things in the short term. Nobody. All the managers that have won things, your Wengers, your Fergusons, take apart the Leicester City year when they won the Premier League, the Guardiolas, they're all, you know, this is all a carefully thought out operation, if you like. And if you start making short term decisions on three games, for instance, then you're never going to get anywhere.
Yeah. So, Mark, I'm going to ask a question. So, despite Aston Villa's poor start to the season, we said about turning it around. But what are your predictions for the season?
Predictions? Dear me. Do you know what? I don't know about the Premier League because, like I said, win, lose or draw, it's only 3 games old. I think Sunderland have done some interesting business. I think Everton might be one to watch this year under David Moyes. I think they look new stadium. I think he's working for them. Seems to be a good bounce about Everton at the moment. I'm not talking about them winning the Premier League, but I think they'd be certainly one to watch. You've got your Arsenals, your Man Cities, etc. that are going to be up there. Newcastle, Spurs might be a different animal this year. Yeah. It's going to be tough. You know, I think this is arguably...
It gets harder every season.
Yeah, I think this is the toughest Premier League for many a year, to be fair. But listen, I still think this is an incredibly exciting time for Aston Villa Football Club. Number one, they're in the Premier League and they will give anybody a game on any given day. There's no two ways about that. You know, nobody's going to come to Villa Park and enjoy the experience. You know, they've only lost the Palace game was the first one they'd lost in over a year. So, you know, they've got a phenomenal home record. There's the Europa League to look forward to. And I think they realistically would be hoping to go quite a distance in that competition.
I'd like Villa to win a trophy this season.
Oh, I'm sure everybody would. I think some of the players have come out and said that as well, that, you know, this is a good moment for the football club and winning a trophy would cap it off. But there's a lot of other clubs that would be like to win a trophy this year. So, you know, all those clubs I've just mentioned, for instance. So what I would say is I think this is a tough season. I think it's an exciting season. And I think that there is the possibility of Aston Villa winning something. Don't ask me specifically what that is, but I think that Villa could not expect, but hope, that this could be the year where there's a little bit of silverware on the table.
I can feel your positivity, Ringo.
Yay! Keep smiling.
Well, thank you, Mark. You've been a great guest on today's episode.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you everyone for watching. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please remember to make sure to subscribe. Make sure to hit the likes, smash the likes on this podcast. Make sure to give it a share on your socials. And make sure, if you're listening via audio, to leave us a good review. That always helps. Also, make sure to let me know your thoughts in the comment section. Thank you so much, Mark, for your time.
No problem. No problem at all.
I am going to wrap up this episode with Villa Forever, as always. And up the Villa.